check out our website at www.thefantasyamateurs.com.
On this edition of the Nasty Cast, we welcome the Welsh from the In This League podcast to take a look at starting pitchers outside the top 50. We kick off with ADP wars and give you our targets and avoids at the position, take a look at some impact rookie starters, finish off the show by having a figurative cup of coffee with the Welsh. What is this, a fantasy baseball podcast?
Yes!
That's all we talk about on this podcast is interesting things. Jesse, go toss a potato.
Here lies Joe. He died wearing braces.
Be interesting when she has her heavy flow at times.
It's not Nick Nolte.
That damn dirty ape.
You're going to blow Arkansas?
The Hindenburger cheese.
We follow the golden rule!
I'm in a league with the Pope.
Could have been an accountant!
Replace the baseballs with hand grenades.
Thor, he's like Jesus, but for people from Norway.
Eating ain't cheating. Welcome to episode 69 of the Nasty Cast Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by thefantasyamateurs.com. I am Nate Dockin. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dockin. And I'm joined today by a man whose favorite sexual position is the 78, Joe Osachi.
Who doesn't like to 78
you're
on occasion?
Slightly adjacent to the 69, just a little off where you're not quite connecting, you know?
I don't really know how anyone turns their body into an egg, but anyway, I assumed you were going to make as many inappropriate.
It's episode 69, Joe.
Oh, hey-o. Yeah, you were trying to keep it
dinner
classy
for two
around here, Nate. But anyway, there's only one way to class up the show at this point. We need to bring on our guests, which the Welsh
from the ITL podcast, of course. Welcome, Mr. Welsh.
Yes.
How, Mr. Welsh, how appropriate. I'm on episode 69. I feel honored. I would say my number would be 37.
37. My girlfriend sucked 37 dicks.
In a row?
37 in a row? That would be, yeah.
We're going to have to make a special occasion and splice that clip into the show.
37. Yeah, how appropriate you guys got me on episode 69. Let's 69.
It is a happy coincidence.
Yeah.
We'll be the first pot. We'll be the first group of people that make three people a 69. It'll be great.
Interesting. Yes. Well, the more sexual jokes that you can make, the better, because Joe hates that kind of stuff. It makes him very very uncomfortable.
Well, you know what I'm all about, Nate.
You are about respect for women.
I'm
but you know
about
what the best way
women,
to respect women, Joe, is by pleasuring them with a good 69 position.
Apparently, yeah. That is, as long as you're being respectful, I guess I don't have any problems with
as
it.
As long as you're not calling them names.
Sure. Whatever you got to do to keep it respectful.
I see. Okay. Well, first things first, right off the bat, I have to thank you, the Welsh, for CJ McCollum, actually, because I listened to your fantasy basketball podcast, because I decided to do, sort of out of the blue, I decided to do a fantasy basketball league this year, which I hadn't done in a couple years because it just never has really grabbed me by the pants, you know. But I was like, you know what? I want to actually win my league this year. So I listened to one of your draft soups, and you had some Roto World guys on there, and you all just kept hammering home CJ McCollum, go draft him. And I got him, and right now I am in second place in my league.
Yeah, definitely. Basketball, yeah, I think we had the whole Roto World crew on that, and that was like Steve Alexander and Mike Gallagher and Aaron Brewski and all those guys. And, I mean, that's Mike Gallagher, if you guys, you know, follow Roto World basketball at all, he was, harpening that all season. But, yeah, good job. I'm not in the playoffs. I suck. I blow in basketball this year.
Done?
So all the hope, even though last year I won three of our, because at ITL we do, like, all the major four sports plus college football, and of the three majors, I won all of them in 2015. And this year, it hasn't been a good start, but I'm going to turn around for baseball, which actually we just did a draft soup for baseball today. Actually, we released.
Yes,
it.
Of course, with the great Tim McLeod and Howard Bender, both Nasty Cast veterans.
Those are classy. Those are classy guys. That's how you would have classed up this episode if you would have got a real guest, Tim McCloud or Howard Bender, not me.
Tim's a classy guy for sure. Yeah, he's the all-time record holder for guest appearances. What have we had him on, like
something
four times,
like that? Howard Bender, when we had him on, of course. I don't know about class because we talked about Chris Jones's junk falling out at the NFL Combine quite a bit. So
I bet that was a perfect episode to have him on. Then that's fantastic. You should have had him on 69. Then you get to talk more about
your
junk.
Right, we should have.
Oh, Lord. Well, we can just, like, every episode from now on, we could just call it episode 69. I mean,
totally. You should. You shouldn't go past 69. Who would want to go past 69?
I don't know. That's the top of the mountain, really.
At some point, how long are we going to really keep numbering them, I guess?
Yeah, might as well stop now.
You only number them after you get married. You're like, what is this? Like the fourth time this year? That's the only time the numbers come in.
So I don't know when the hell that Jesse's going to get to producing this podcast. But as we record this, as we sit here and chat with each other, it is St. Patrick's Day. So I have to ask you, the Welsh, are you excited for St. Patrick's Day being the Welsh?
I love the. You just call me the. We don't need to get formal with the last name or anything like that. You know, I hate to admit it, especially with having that name. I actually, it's funny, with the name, I bring in a lot of like international people that will listen because they're like, hey, it's Welsh. I'm like the least of any of that stuff. I woke up this morning and I was like, oh, it's St. Patrick's Day today. That's cool. I'll make sure not to wear green. I'm just one of those people. I haven't drank, no green, though I have enjoyed, you know, watching the debauchery down the street as you drive into work. And you're like, yep, okay, that's cool. There's a, you know, about four girls, all green. It's about 8 a.m. and they can barely walk. This is St. Patrick's Day for sure.
I do love this holiday. And it also means March Madness, which we're going to be getting into some of our bracket tournaments starting next week. We haven't really had time for the buffoonery that we normally do this preseason. We've been too busy, you know, helping everybody draft the proper fantasy squad.
And having on guys like Paul Spohr last week. Why are you having me follow Paul Spohr?
Oh, that's a tough follow there, yeah. He was one of the best guests we've had. I was kind of almost intimidated. I was just worried that I would say something and Spohr would call me an idiot just because. I don't know why. But he was super nice.
Paul's the best. We can get lots of dick and fart jokes with him whenever we get him. We class it up with Paul.
That's good. Yeah, it turned out that I was the only one that made fun of Joe for being stupid. So, but that's par for the course.
Yeah. You always
I
do, though, yeah.
All right, and yes, in case the Bucketeers haven't realized it yet, we're going to be talking more starting pitching this week, piggybacking off what we did last week, and we're digging into the middle and late rounds this week, however. And so we're going to dive right into that with ADP Wars. All right, so what this is, Mr. Welsh, is basically similarly grouped pitchers in ADP, and it's pretty much who would you rather draft between the two. And so we're going to start with Gio Gonzalez, whose ADP currently is 180, versus Patrick Corbin, whose ADP is 192. Who would you rather draft?
I like that one. It's funny because a lot of these, my personal ranks definitely differ. So digging into my ranks, I have Gio Gonzalez at 55 overall starting pitchers, but I have Patrick Corbin at 33. And it's a pretty stark difference. It's not necessarily that I'm a Diamondbacks fan. I'm not a super big homer. I tend to be more of a pessimist about moves. Hated all the moves of the Diamondbacks. I mean, Zach Greinke was great, but you know, the trade, the horrible Shelby Miller trade just disgusted me. But I really like Patrick Corbin. I love him as a three. He's not an elite strikeout guy, but he's definitely better than advertised. You guys put out the tweet when the Diamondbacks were playing the other night, and Patrick Corbin was, you know, was mowing him down. Six strikeouts, four innings, I think he did. I think he can have a game or two in season, which is going to make that ERA sit around the three mark. So he can come in. He can go eight. He can go nine. He could strike out nine in a game, but he could also have a three-inning, you know, nine runs. But if he can keep that whip in like the sub 1-2 area, I think he can also hover in the eight-ish strikeout per nine, the K per nine area. That's going to be a solid number three. So if I can get him as my number four starting pitcher, which these ADPs are going to allow me to do that, I'm feeling awesome. But I'm perfectly fine with him as my three. Very, very high on him. And then as far as Gio Gonzalez, to me, he's just kind of more of a five. I guess he could work as a four. My problem is his high walk rate. He's almost got like a 3.5 walk per nine, and his whip is sitting like almost like 1.4. So he's just already going to lose you that. The walks kind of subdue any great strikeout numbers that you would get from him. I'm totally a strikeout whore. Give me all the strikeouts that I can possibly get. He plays for a good team. Love the defense with the Diamondbacks. Long-winded answer, but I love Patrick Corbin, top 35. No, that's
perfect. All right, what do you think, Joe?
We talked about Patrick Corbin a little bit on our yet-to-be-released episode, and I said I kind of thought that he had the upside to be, you know, a really low, probably really low in number two, kind of like I said, kind of maybe like a left-handed Sonny Gray, where the strikeouts aren't elite, but maybe he can pile up the innings and get you the good ratios. Probably not this year, though, because I do think this year they'll probably try and limit his innings. I know we did say, you know, supposedly he has no innings restrictions, but
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, I just would worry that a little bit in his first year coming back, maybe they don't. But yeah, there is that. So hopefully that's not as much of a concern. I like him way more than I like Gio Gonzalez. Gio Gonzalez has every indicator last year said he had one of the unluckiest seasons of any pitcher in baseball. So you could bet on a big rebound from Gio Gonzalez. But when I watched him this last season, I kind of feel like he's just losing his stuff a little bit. And he's just a little bit too hittable. And he had one of the highest batting averages allowed in baseball last year. And that's partially due to he had a really high BABIP allowed. And I do think luck was part of it. But I also think he's just not quite as good as he used to be. And he just doesn't have the upside that Patrick Corbin does. And I think Patrick Corbin's one of my favorite targets here late in the draft.
You know, I wanted to ask you guys real quick. I was listening to your episode with Spore, and you guys brought up something that I'm pretty adamant about, and I agreed with what Paul said as far as, like, you don't have to have the top, you know, 20 pitchers or anything like that, but I want to, and that's my drafting habit. Would you really feel great with Patrick Corbin as your number two? Like,
oh,
I would
no, yeah.
Yeah, because I would assume on that strategy, you've probably gone and got one pitcher, and then you've waited a whole long time. These ADPs make both of these guys actually pretty valuable, but Patrick Corbin a lot more. But, I mean, do you guys sit in that? Would you really feel awesome if Patrick Corbin was a number two, or do you want a couple of the top end?
I do personally want to get at least one of the top guys, and I would rather get probably two guys in the top 20 and then wait until the end for my threes and fours and fives. I'm not going to ever draft him as my second starting pitcher. I just think there's a chance that he can maybe perform like that. But
I like your Sonny Gray comp. That's an interesting comp.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know that he's ever going to be the elite strikeout pitcher, but, you know, Sonny Gray isn't, and he managed to put up a close to top 20 season last year, and that's kind of where we're valuing him. So, yeah, I think he could perform that way, but I'm not the guy that waits that long on starting pitching. I mean, I like to grab a couple high-end guys and then wait, and then at the end of the draft kind of fill in with some of the higher upside guys later on. So if he was my number two, I'd be feeling pretty scared.
Yeah, I'd be a little bit of concern. Number four, my drafting habits, he's definitely my number four almost at every point. Unless I'm in a draft where, like, just everybody knows my habits and all my guys that I have ranked into the mid-20s go, then Patrick Corbin becomes the number three. But I love the Sonny Gray comp.
Yeah, no, I agree with you guys. I think that as far as my general drafting strategy, I'm very slow to draft pitchers. This year is going to be a little bit different. Just because pitching is so pushed up as compared to previous seasons. So I am going to, in the first three rounds for sure, I'm going to be drafting an ace. And I will definitely want, I would say, I would be more inclined to draft Carlos Rodon, who's going a few picks in front of Corbin, you know, as like a number three. But they both have really nice upside. Gio Gonzalez, he offers a really good floor. Like Joe, like you harped on, you know, really unlucky with a 341 BABIP last year. So, I mean, I like both of these guys, but if you're going upside, and really, I think his floor it's less strikeouts than Gio Gonzalez. But, you know, overall, I like Corbin's profile a lot better.
I bet you they're pretty close in strikeouts at the end of the season, by the way. Like, I know they will, like, temper Corbin a tiny bit, but if he had 190 innings, I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. And Gio jumps off the shelf for a little bit. I bet you they're within 15 strikeouts of each other.
Gio's not the strikeout pitcher that he used to be either. I mean, you know, his first couple of years, he was a strikeout per inning guy, but he wasn't that last year. You know, I mean, he was still close, but I do think there's a chance his strikeouts fall off a little bit too, just as he gets older and the stuff diminishes a little bit more.
Okay, so what about our second matchup then? Joe Ross at 236 versus Alex Wood, whose ADP is 243. Joe, we'll start with you here.
What? Where you're gonna go?
Yeah, we had a. I thought quite bold statement that I think Joe Ross will already be the better Ross of the two Rosses. I just really like to compare him to Tyson as brothers. But yeah, I love Joe Ross, and I don't really like Alex Wood at all. I guess I don't know. I don't think it's not close at all for me. Joe Ross is definitely one of my targets later on. And I'm definitely biased on Joe Ross. I think it was 2 years ago, and I was watching a spring training game, and I don't really particularly think anyone had ever really heard about him. I'd never heard anybody talk about him. I didn't even know Tyson Ross had a brother that was in the minors, and it was a Padres spring training game, and I was watching, and randomly Joe Ross was pitching, and I saw him out there throwing 95, and I'm like, this guy's good. Who is this guy? I've never seen him on any prospect list. So I added him, and I even sent a message to Rich Wilson, and he said he thought he had good stuff, just wasn't sure if he'd be able to put it all together. And then I believe later that season, Keith Law put him on his midseason top 50 prospects, and he really blew up. So I've always liked him since then, because I felt like I kind of found him before other people did. So maybe that's coloring me a little bit, just because I want him to be as good as I thought he was going to be several years ago. But yeah, I'm a big fan of Joe Ross. I'm going to take him easily over Alex Wood, who I just really don't like this year.
Yeah, Wood is just kind of blah. I don't know. I've never liked him just because, I mean, partially because I guess everybody's always crapped on his delivery. You know, it's so wonky and hard to repeat and everything. And he's not the strikeout guy that Joe Ross is. He did actually manage to go 190 innings last year, which surprised me actually when I looked at it. He's just been a guy who's always been off my radar. Joe Ross just offers so much more upside to me. You know, he's got a similar repertoire as his brother, sinker slider. And I think he could, you know, you could see a third pitch from him this year and, you know, some increased innings and effectiveness. So I just think Ross is an easy pick for me, too. But what do you think, Welsh?
Yeah, I love your comparison, too, though. Just like that's exactly how I think about Wood. I have these guys. My ranks are very drastic. Alex Wood is outside my top 100 and Joe Ross is my 53rd starting. So, I mean, I do some updated ranks, and I was actually working on them a little bit today, so that might change just a tiny bit, but I have just no interest in Wood. 3-year decline on the fastball, lost like 7% on his strikeout percentage last year, 24-17. The Dodgers, I mean, they keep him somewhat relevant for value, I guess, because, you know, there's an offense there, and there's some wins, and there's a lot of injuries. But the only thing when I look at him is I don't think that even though they've got two, you know, Anderson went down and they've got another guy out. He's essentially sitting at their number three spot. I still don't think it's guaranteed, especially midseason. I think, you know, De Leon, Urias, those guys could come up. And I just there's no stake in him. I'll have no shares whatsoever. Where Ross, I really like him. His ADP is pretty sweet because he can be a six or seven, you know, SP7 or something like that with an 8+K/9. The only thing I would worry just a tiny bit about, like, so if I tell you I have him as like my 53rd ranked starting pitcher, that might make someone be like, wow, I'm going to have Joe Ross as my fourth pitcher. I wouldn't do that because I'm a little bit concerned. He pitched to kind of a low BAP last year. Also, it was like about 70% left on base. So if both of those rise this year, he might have some struggles, but he doesn't have the same like walk issues. It doesn't seem like he doesn't have the same walk issues that his brother has. But he's got a decent amount of a decent strikeout rate. And a lot of people are concerned about him because of Giolito, but I think if Giolito comes up, he's going to push Rourke. So I definitely will have and have shares of Joe Ross. He's for sure a target for me.
Yeah. All right. Totally agreed. So we're going to go on to our third matchup of the day, and that is Jay Happ at 340 versus Vincent Velasquez at 357. And I'll start us off. I mean, I kind of struggle with this one more than the other ones, just because Jay Happ, I mean, he offers so much more of a floor than VV, but VV is more of the upside play here. We'll see how much of that sewage factor that he carries on into Toronto with him. You know, it's what cracks me up is I remember Eno Saris talking about this on the Fangraphs podcast last year. Oh, what did he do to crack the code with Jay Happ? How did he get him to be so much more effective? And he said, well, he just had him throw his good pitches more.
Really? That's it?
That was brain surgery. Okay. So, I mean, it seems like it's something that could carry over, and he could be successful over, you know, a full season with probably a lot of wins in front of that terrific Blue Jays lineup. Velasquez, I think he could be very effective as well. Certainly, even if he pitches 20 less innings than J-Hap, he could have just as many strikeouts. So I guess if you're looking floor, if it's a deeper league, I'm going to go Hap. But if it's a 12-team league and you're just taking a real deep flyer, I would take Velasquez. So what do you think, the Welsh?
Yeah, I agree for the most part with exactly what you said. They're both about the same range for me. They're within five spots of each other. Hap is also kind of just like, yeah, he's like meh, you know, mid three ERA, maybe get you four or five strikeouts a game. He's locked into the rotation though, which is great. And there's a decent bullpen with a ton of offense for him. So for that perspective, I actually kind of like him. Vince Velasquez, I think he's going to be really good in like 2 years. So from a dynasty perspective, I would be jumping all over him. But, you know, in Philly, he's not guaranteed a rotation spot right now, so he might not break camp. He's got some really big walk numbers, and there's not a whole bunch of offense there. To me, it determines when Philly lets the youth movement happen. Because right now, they're just rostering and playing a whole bunch of awful players. But once they decide, like, hey, J.P. Crawford's going to come up, and Nick Williams is going to come up, and Jorge Alfaro, you know, in 2 years, that team could really be something to look at. And then the only counter I would say to your point where you were saying, like, in a 12-man, you might take that flyer on him, I would actually kind of go the opposite end where I just don't think I am taking him either place, whether it's a 10, a 12, or maybe if it's like a 16 or deeper. And it would be for this reason, because the guy we just talked about, a guy like Joe Ross, I'm probably going to get is like, I don't know, my 5 or 6. And there's some inherent risk with him. I can go, I know what I'm getting with Hap. Like you said, there's a low ceiling. I know I'm going to get mid ERA. Maybe I'll get some quality starts. I'm going to get some wins. I know what I have with him. So I might go with a little bit of a safer pick than a Velasquez, who I might have to sit on for a while. So, but they're
both.
Yeah,
no, that is a good point. I mean, Velasquez, obviously, with an ADP of 357, that's not even being drafted in normal 12-team league. So he is a guy that you don't necessarily have to draft. You can just sit back and see, if he's being successful.
Total radar guy. He's like total keep on your radar guy all season when he gets called up and you're hunting strikeouts or something. Definitely would look.
Yeah, that's true. How about you, Joe? What do you think?
I actually am a big fan of J-Hap. He was a guy that I picked last year in our lottery ticket starting pitchers as a guy that I thought could finish top 20, which I even at the time I said it's probably a stretch because, you know, how much upside could J-Hap really have? I loved him going to Seattle out of the ballpark in Toronto, and then he sucked in Seattle. He was terrible. But when he went to Pittsburgh, as we all know, Ray Searage poured his magic fairy dust on him and said, hey, those pitches that work, throw those more, apparently.
I think they just shared a 69 is what happened.
Perhaps. That's Ray Searage's secret this entire time. But he actually, over his last 10 starts, he averaged close to a strikeout per inning, like 61 strikeouts in his final 10 starts. He ended the season really, really well for them. And the season before that, when he was in Toronto, he actually had crazy home road splits that year and was actually better at home in Toronto. So for some reason he pitched, or at least a couple years ago, he pitched really well in that park. So I don't fear the ballpark with him. I don't necessarily fear the AL because he's pitched there before and had success before. I really like J-Hap. I don't think he's going to strike out a batter per inning or anything like that. But if he could creep up towards 8K9, I think he actually does have a little bit of upside and could, you know, he'd be a guy that I think would be a solid starter in a 12-team league. And you can get him as like your last pick. So I'll probably take him with my last pick in a couple drafts that I do. And I think he'll probably be a good points leaguer, hopefully put up a decent amount of innings for you and get some wins, I think. So yeah, I'm a big fan of J-Hap. And yeah, for me, Velasquez would be a guy that I would put on my watch list, not necessarily a guy that I'm going to draft.
Right on. All right, we are going to move on to two starting pitchers to target.
I'm going to make your heart explode.
All right, the Welsh, we're going to ask you to provide us with two starting pitchers who are currently being drafted outside of the top 50 starting pitchers, according to Fantasy Pros ADP, who you're going to be looking to draft in all your leagues this year.
Beautiful. You want me to give them both right off the bat?
Yeah, what the hell? Go on a big monologue for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, great. Yeah, that's what Bogman, my co-host, is like, shut the hell up. Jeez. Talking. You know, and I don't want to echo like what you guys did on your last episode, but I can't not talk about this guy if we're talking about outside top 50. And I think, Joe, you were talking about it with Spore, and Spore liked him. And it's Ian Kennedy. I love
him. Oh, geez, Ian Kennedy. Love Ian Kennedy.
Yeah, you can't not. You know, Fantasy Pros has him at 71. I have him at 53 right now. I think with, like you guys said, like with a return to the strikeouts, with that defense, there's a winning mentality in Kansas City where, you know, not in San Diego. I don't see why I don't want all the shares of Ian Kennedy. I think he is like the prime. If I'm building a staff, we were talking about, you know, where do you sit on the top end starters? I'm actually going to be taking two of the guys that are in the top 20. Then I'm going to go, and I've got a couple like guys that I really like, Carlos Martinez, Marcus Stroman, that I'm going to try to get in the mid rounds. Then when I'm putting together my five and six, I want like Ian Kennedy and Joe Ross, or Ian Kennedy and Aaron Nola, something like that. And Ian Kennedy is a guy that could put up starting pitcher three numbers this year. Love him in Kansas City. And I think he's going to keep, I'm surprised he is 71 on Fantasy Pros. That surprises me. The other one I'll give you is a super deep one. And when I actually saw where he was on Fantasy Pros, I was like, oh, that surprised me. And it's Daniel Norris. They have him at 122. I have him at 66. He's a year removed from cancer and, you know, in his van. He's still in his van, I guess. But it seemed like he was kind of finding himself in Detroit last year. Great mentor in Verlander, who's having like a fantastic spring, amazing offense. And we're talking about a guy who was striking. He was striking everyone out in the minors. So, you know, you take that all into consideration. He's a guy that's on almost nobody's radar. And we actually just did this. We did this show. It's called like Ranks Analysis, where we're looking at the top major sites like Yahoo, ESPN, CBS, and we're looking at where the major discrepancies are in ranks. Daniel Norris is one of those perfect examples. If you are not, you know, going and scouring down and queuing up specific players, you're going to miss out on a player like him, where if I had the choice of we're talking about Jay Happ. If I have the choice between Happ and Daniel Norris, it's Daniel Norris all day long at 66. So I imagine, though, if people snipe me on it, I'll have all the shares of Daniel Norris this year.
That's an interesting. I haven't heard. Yeah, I definitely haven't heard anybody talking about him. He was kind of a buzzy player last year. Now, yeah, I guess he is kind of a forgotten man. So I think that's a good call.
Yeah, I mean, Rich, you know, remember, yeah, Rich on him a couple years ago was just, he's going to be the next big lefty. I think you have to take some of that into consideration when you're looking at these guys. That guy went through a lot. You know, we look at Gene Segura, who went through some real hard family troubles a couple years ago and really brought him off kind of a fantasy radar. Well, once you have time to kind of recover from these major life events, some people are going to regain what they lost. So that's something I would look at with Daniel Norris, where he was going at the back end of like everyone's draft last season, and he disappointed, so he burned a lot of people all over it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, his swing and strike rate last year jumped almost 2 full percent. He was at 9.2%, and I think the strikeouts will come. His strikeout rate was only 17.9%, so I think that portends a lot more strikeouts with him as he matures. And yeah, I like that call a lot. Joe, what about you?
Well, obviously, my number one target would be Ian Kennedy. I mean, that was definitely the guy I was going to start off the list with. It's been like four times when you let the guests have their targets first.
That's why they're guests, man.
But I guess it's hospitality. But yeah, so what's that?
It's smart minds. We think thinking alike here.
I guess, yeah. I was so excited to talk about Gregory Polanco when we had Gray Albright on, and then he just absolutely loves him and talks about him all the time. Totally stole any thunder I would have had on that one. But I'll go with one that's not necessarily that deep, and one guy that you can take you know, I mean, he probably not even draftable in any in a 12-team league. But I'm going to give it one last year on the Gaussman train. It's my last time that I can do it, because, I mean, he keeps killing me. But I'm going to try it one last time, man. And I think if he puts it all together, he could still be, you know, a number two starting pitcher in fantasy. At this point, I'm starting to doubt it more and more, just because we've had two seasons of frustration and them screwing with him and moving with the bullpen. So, but I think if they do just leave him alone and just let him pitch, figure it out, I think he will, and I think he could be a stud for you. So that's a guy that I'm going to like. And You know, this one, the next one, I'm not really so sure. But if I'm in like a 15 team league or a 20 team league or an only league, I definitely am going to want to draft Jonathan Neese just due to the race series factor, and we've talked about it a ton. And maybe I'm missing out on the race series magical guy. Maybe it's Juan Nicasio maybe is the guy. But I'm gonna throw a couple darts this year at Jonathan Neese.
Well, that's.
I end up owning him like every year. At some point, he is on my roster every single year. I totally agree with you.
I'm the same guy. I mean, it seems unnecessary to throw darts at the poor man. I don't know what he ever did to you. But, yeah, he's another guy who's always, you know, talk about undervalued. He's just one of those scrape the bottom of the barrel guys. Like, he's always there. So, yeah, he ends up on a lot of my teams as well. And, I see no reason he couldn't be very useful, especially in 15-team leagues, you know, this year.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like in a 12-team league, I probably would rather take a guy, you know, like the Welsh were saying with the Daniel Norris. You know, he's got more upside. But in the deeper the league gets, Jonathan Neese, he just becomes more and more valuable. And I think he could potentially be 12-team mixed league viable. It just depends on exactly how much going to Pittsburgh helps him. But it's generally helped pretty much everyone that's gone there.
Can I ask you real quick on your Gossman pick? Because I think that's an interesting one, and he seems really like buzzy right now. I think Fantasy Pros has him at like 68. How would you go if you were given the option of Joe Ross, Aaron Nola, or Kevin Gossman? Like, how would you rank it?
I'm taking Ross first, just because I feel like he's safer. I mean, yeah, I think he's going to keep his rotation spot all year. I know, like you said, Giolito's there, but I don't think Joe Ross is coming out of that rotation. So I'd have Ross first, Gausman second, myself, and then Aaron Nola third. And it is definitely possible that Aaron Nola outperforms him, but Nola's not a guy that I'm targeting particularly this year. And Gausman, I can't like point to stats and say he's done this or he's done that because he's just never done it. I mean, I just have watched him pitch and I just love the stuff with him. You know, he's just nasty. You watch him and you think that he could throw a no-hitter on any night, and I've watched him take a couple into the fifth and the sixth, and then, you know, things tend to fall apart for him. But yeah, I'm gonna take Ross over Gausman for the safety, but after that I'll take Gausman for the upside. And Nola, you know, I'm not really too sure. I'd rank him last. Maybe that's not what other people think, but I'm just not that high on Aaron Nola.
What about Kennedy? Not to like monopolize this. I'm just curious. I do this with like my co-host where I'm like, let's create the range of how you value this player. Would you go Kennedy over Gossman?
I would. Yeah. Kennedy, I like better than all those guys. I like Ian Kennedy the best out of that group. Ian Kennedy to me has, you know, even though we generally, like we said with Paul, even though he's not a young guy, I see a lot of upside with him. He strikes out a batter per inning. He's done that for a while, and now if he's going to the ballpark with the great defense, like I think Ian Kennedy, you know, like you said, he could be like a number three. So, yeah, I like him better than those other guys. I think the other three are such young pitchers, we don't really know what they are yet. And Ian Kennedy, we kind of already know what he is, and that defense could just elevate him, I think, so much. So I'd rank Ian. I'd go Kennedy, Ross, Gausman, Nola for me.
Like it.
What about you, Welsh? I mean, are you a big Nola fan, or?
I am a big Nola. Aaron Nola is definitely like one of my guys. And you know, I was really going with the young guys. I wanted to see where Kennedy fell kind of in all of that. But if I'm ranking Gausman, Nola, Ross, it goes Nola, Ross, Gausman for me. It's not in because I think Gausman's going ahead of both of those guys, even though if you go look at the ranks, that's not necessarily the story. But in some websites, Gausman's going before Nola. He's also going before Joe Ross. I'm just not sold into it. And maybe that's going to be, you know, my fault at the end of the day. I just keep seeing Aaron Nola is easy to, you know, look past because it's Philly. It would be the same argument you could almost talk with if Vince Velasquez was in the rotation and had it locked in. Like, where is he going to get his wins? But Aaron Nola did a pretty good job last year. So I think quality starts are there. He can get you innings. He can surprise you with some strikeouts and keep the walk. I really like Aaron Nola. Like, I wouldn't come on here and tell you he's going to be like the next Cole Hamels, but there's a lot of kind of the young comparisons. Like 2 years from now, Aaron Nola is going to be the ace of this team, and it won't even be a question.
Yeah, you know, partially due to lack of competition, but I do like him though, I agree that he's underrated. Just excellent command and control, and yeah, definitely the ability to go some big innings. My two guys, I'm going to start off with Anthony Desclafani. And this has sort of been another fan crafts, you know, one that they've hit on a lot over there. He really came into his own last year. He switched up his pitch mix. And from August to the end of the season, he posted excellent strikeout and walk rates. His August was 8.4 strikeouts, 1.2 walks. September, October was 9.61 strikeouts, 1.3 walks. So it's going to be a bad team. But, I mean, that strikeout minus walk rate is terrific. And I think he could pay huge dividends this year for anybody that drafts him. Just good stuff there. And my second one, actually, the Walsh, you could probably tell me more about this guy than I could even find out just from the interwebs reading about it, and that's Robbie Ray, Mr. Diamondback. I think he's got a good shot at making the rotation this year, unless you think otherwise. A little bit of control issues, but pretty good strikeout numbers. So what do you think of him, the Walsh?
Yeah, his strikeouts are good. My co-host likes him a little bit more than I do, but he's fine. One of the things we talked about with him, this is the nice thing about him and why he should probably be drafted in 12-man or higher. Maybe, I mean, 12-man might be questionable, but if you're deep 12-man for sure. But like you said, the strikeout numbers are definitely there. Great defense behind him, which you have to give that into consideration. He might sneak in some wins. I worry if he's going to be a quality start guy, and the bigger worry is if he's a long-term option. So let's say right now they have already committed to him. He is going to start the season, and they're also looking at, I think it's Ruby De La Rosa, who will be the five. I know, gross. It's totally gross. I want Archie Bradley to get it. But they've got. I think what's going to end up happening is they're going to have to find a reason to get Robbie Ray out, and he may eventually go to the bullpen. I could be wrong. 24-year-old that's almost posting a strikeout per inning. That's not something you just balk at, especially when they're so top heavy.
They do have big boobs.
I draft him. Yeah, totally. It's 69. It's the perfect thing. But I'm not I'm just not aggressive on him. I guess that's the best way I can tell you. He'll have a spot. I don't think he has it the whole season. I would be surprised if he has more than 15 starts under his belt, because Braden Shipley might come up. I think Archie becomes the number four, and then they could either trade for somebody, which I think is very likely, or they could bring up a Braden Shipley, and he would be the five.
Okay. Interesting. Well, we will move on then. I don't have anything more to add there, so we're going to move on to two starters who are outside the top 50 we're going to avoid. All right, so we will start with Joe on this one. Who are two guys that you're going to avoid here?
Okay, well, and we're late, so you hate to really crap on too many of these guys. I kind of felt like you almost have to pick guys that are pretty close to 50 to really say they're going to avoid. It's not going to really do anybody any good for me to say I'm avoiding Kyle Gibson or something like that. I mean, he's not drafted almost anywhere, but I would avoid Kyle Gibson probably. I don't know. That's just a random guy that
what did he ever do to
picked
you?
Off the, off the ADP.
Come on, Twins guys here. Jeez.
Didn't find out some good strikeout numbers, yeah.
He's actually not that bad. He's just not necessarily a huge fantasy pitcher. But I was looking at the ADP, and I saw, to me, I don't understand why anybody would be drafting Marco Estrada at the point that he's going.
Yeah, I picked Marco Estrada too. So.
Wow! All right,
total unison here. Perfect.
He's the worst.
Looking at season long, luck stat leaders. I mean, he basically was the luckiest pitcher I've ever seen last year to get to do what he did. He led the league in lowest batting average allowed and lowest average. Just every stat that you look at tells you that the wheels are going to fall off this season. So yeah, don't draft him. I don't. It seems so obvious to me. I don't know how people can't see it. And the other guy that I'll say, and we touched on him a little bit in our last episode, although I don't think we've released that one yet, but I'm going to avoid Jaime Garcia.
Oh my God, you took both of my guys.
Really? Okay. Sorry about that, but he's too injury prone for me. So I guess Nate,
that's
come up with
argument.
Two more guys.
Yeah, great. Thanks, God.
On the fly.
I should have. You know what? Screw you, Joe. I'm going to go the other way because I found a guy that I actually like in these rankings that I forgot to mention, and so this is not an avoid. This is a target for me.
bonus target because I'm giving you zero avoids since Joe took Marco Estrada and Jaime Garcia from me. But Erasmo Ramirez is interesting. He had an 11.3% swinging strike rate last year and showed a lot of improvement. Really good ground ball rate too, 47.8%. So he's a guy, and this is kind of like Robbie Ray. We're talking deep leagues here, like 15-team leagues. That's kind of the point of this podcast. But I think he's a guy who could be pretty useful this year. So, okay, we're going to go to the other side of the coin now. We're going to go back to being negative. So, the Welsh, who do you hate?
Well, Marco Estrada was one. We have a joke on our podcast about beating our FIP. We've changed those around. And Marco Estrada was totally just ravaging. Ravaging.
That thing fell off.
Single kid on prom night just ravaging that thing. He had a 3.13 ERA.
He couldn't
even get the six. He couldn't even get – that's what it was. But he had a 4.93 xFIP. He almost had a full two-point difference between his ERA and xFIP. You guys already said it. I would want no shares. And also I would just point out, though, the reason I don't want any shares is because where he's going. Is it horrible to take Marco Estrada? No. What if he's like lucky-ish again? That's fine. But he's in the 63 range. He's going ahead of guys like – Joe Ross, Aaron Nola, Kevin Gausman, Ian Kennedy, Jimmy Nelson, Matt Moore, who's just destroying spring training right now. I'm not taking him ahead of any of those guys. So, I don't even know where I have Marco Estrada right now, but it's low. It's probably like in the 90s or 80s or 100s or somewhere in there. The other guy, though, is having just an atrocious spring training. And just because I'm a Diamondbacks fan doesn't mean I'm an anti-Dodger guy, but I will have zero shares of Scott Kazmir. When we did our own ranks analysis. So when Bogman and I will post our top 300, we actually compared it to Fantasy Pros and we were like, where are we insane? Are we the highest in the world or lowest in the world? Apparently I was the lowest in the world on Scott Kazmir from my rankings from a month ago. And I just moved him down even further. He's not striking people out. It just looks like a really bad situation. Plus, like I said, with Alex Wood, the team is motivated. So if he is going to struggle, why are they going to sit around and wait for him? Just because they gave him money, they can go make a move. They've got a couple young studs down there. And his ADP is, Jesus, what is it? I think it's like 50, 51. Let's look at it.
I think he was 51 the last time I looked, but
he's 53 right now. I think he should not. I'm not touching him before the 70s, at least. And I just won't draft him. He's just a no draft guy for me.
Yeah, I don't know. I know we've been just talk of low velocity or, some diminished velocity. I guess I'm personally avoiding him because I feel like the last 2 years he's just absolutely faded down the stretch. And I think, as he gets older, maybe that fade comes even faster and faster. And yeah, that velocity, down velocity in the spring has got to concern you too. So I definitely am not going to be that excited to get him. And if I would, I just want to wait and take him at the way, way end of the draft. And that's just not where he's going right now.
Yeah, if I was in a league where everybody thought the way I did, and then all of a sudden we're, down in the 70s or 80s, and I'm choosing between okay, is it Andrew Heaney or Scott Kazmir? Well, I don't know. I'd probably go Kazmir because now he's becoming a little bit of a deal, and if he's my starting pitcher 6 or 7, that's fine, but that's just not going to happen.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to move on to a segment that we've actually never done before, and that's we're gonna talk about some rookie impact starting pitchers.
Sing it again, rookie biatch.
All right, so what we're going to do here, I think let's just do this as more of a general discussion because there's going to be a little bit of overlap. We're each going to discuss our top three impact rookie starters, and I'll just get the ball rolling with Lucas Giolito because he's the top pitching prospect that's in the minors right now. So I guess let me pose this question to you, the Welsh. Do you think that we see Lucas Giolito at all in a Washington Nationals uniform this year?
I definitely think we're going to see him. I mean, Dusty, the only problem would be, is Dusty going to run him into the ground, which would be a bigger issue, but I think it's going to be hard. He was potentially going to come up last season, so I think it would be hard to not get him up there. We were talking off air, if there was a comparison to Jose Fernandez out there, remember when he came up, everyone was like, well, maybe we'll get him in July, I don't know. And then April 4th, he was called up. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I mean, if Tanner Roark was garbage or, maybe there was another injury, Bronson Arroyo's done. He's done. He tore everything and is now gone like he should have been 3 years ago. Where else are they going to go unless they're going to, you know, go sign a free agent or something like that when they've got a stud down there. And I think when you're in a win mode and you got a pitcher that's ready to go now, I think you can afford bringing him up and, you know, pitching him 150 innings. So I think he could come up as early as mid-May if they're going to be more responsible with themselves. It's probably going to be the latter half of June or something like that. But I would be shocked if he wasn't up this season.
Yeah. So, Joe, do you think that we could see Giolito perform admirably this year? You know, maybe a rookie of the year kind of deal? Or do you think he's going
to
struggle?
Yeah, I could. Well, I always tend to think that the rookies are going to struggle a little bit, but they sure have been proving me wrong lately. He'd probably be, of all the rookies, well, actually, I'd say he might be the rookie that I'd probably take second if I'm talking about any rookie, but yeah, I mean, he's got all the talent in the world, so I think if he does come, like, I would also, you know, Dusty Baker just has a really bad reputation with young players, so, but if they bring Lucas Giolito up, it's not like he can bench him every other start like he likes to do with the position players. He's pretty much just got to pitch him. So I think if he comes up, he's gonna perform. There could be some bumps in the road, but no, I don't see any reason to worry about him. It's the only thing you're worried about if you're considering actually drafting him in a league is just how long are you gonna have to wait? When does the risk become worth it? You know, if you're in like, you know, 15, the draft and hold NFBC type things, I think he's worth a flyer, because even if he only gets half a season, the numbers could be elite for when he's up.
Especially if you have an NA spot, that's like to me it's like a no brainer. You should be taking one of the top like six prospects if you have an NA spot. By the way, who is your number one? You can't tease that, and I need to know who is the number one guy.
I'd take Jose Berrios first. I mean, yeah. I feel like he's got a better chance to come. Like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the Twins are going to do. We are Twins fans, but yeah, I think he's ready, and the Twins pitching staff is, as per usual,
atrocious,
pretty bad. So what are we waiting for? Yeah.
He's number one on my list. I wrote an article on our website about the joke 37, the 37 prospects that could help you this year in non-dynasty. And Jose Berrios is up near the top. I don't remember off the top of my head right now, but I'm pretty sure he was top five. Because if I were taking a starting pitcher, a rookie starting pitcher, if I had the NA spot, I might lean more towards Lucas Giolito, maybe even Urias. But if I didn't, it would just be a no-brainer. It's Jose Berrios to me. Because I think he definitely could lead all rookies in innings pitch, and he's a high strikeout guy. I love Jose Berrios this year.
Yeah, we actually got to see him. He was at the Futures game. He started, you know, he throws upper 90s. He's got great stuff. Been striking out well, you know, struck out well over a batter per inning in AAA over 75 innings. Like, there's nothing not to like. And, you know, the added benefit of if he comes up is then I never have to watch stupid, Ricky Nolasco again.
Yeah.
If the sooner Ricky Nolasco is out of my life forever, the better.
Everybody, gross.
Yeah, money well spent there. Jesus. I completely agree. Berrios is my number one as well. He's clearly got nothing left to prove in the minors. 287 ERA and 166 in the third innings last year across AA and AAA with 175 strikeouts. So, you know, not too shabby.
And the nice thing about him is he's probably fourth on most people's lists of being drafted. If you're doing like a standard 12-man, let's say. He's probably, I mean, guys, we're going to talk about, but, you know, it's probably Giolito, Glasnow, Urias, Snell, and then people are looking at Jose Berrios, and he might have the biggest impact.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I definitely see him coming up before Glasnow. But, I mean, the Welsh, what do you think? Berrios isn't your number one. Is Giolito your number two?
Giolito's number three on my list just because, I mean, there is still a question mark. And also, I have in the back of my head, like, would the Nationals really be willing to have, like, Joe Ross and Giolito at the back end of their the rotation? I mean, if you got Scherzer and Strasburg, that's not a bad way to go. So I don't know, but I have him at three. The other one, I'm not trying to cop out here. It's like, it's either Urias or De Leon with the Dodgers because I don't know where they're going to go right now. A lot of people think they both actually just got reassigned. We're recording on St. Patrick's Day today. They both were reassigned at camp. So are either going to break camp? Doesn't look like it. I am just I'm just baffled at which one they would go with. My assumption is Urias, which, I mean, he's the elite talent, and he got lit up a little bit, but that's what you want to see sometimes in spring training. That would be the guy that I would be looking at. But Jose De Leon, even after Jose Berrios, that could be another guy you should be looking at. That maybe he's the first one. Maybe they bring him up in, you know, late May, and then Urias comes up in late July or something like that. So I would just pair both of those guys together.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think that I would give the slight nod to Jose De Leon just because he's older. But, that, I mean, otherwise, I would definitely be more excited fantasy-wise for Urias. But,
like a no-brainer in Dynasty.
It's a total no-brainer for me in Dynasty. Yeah.
And it's interesting, if we're talking about deeper leagues, 15-man or, you know, even a 16. I'm doing a 16-man Dynasty with a bunch of our listeners, and that's just insane. But you're talking 15-man. A lot of people are forgetting about these, and there's a pretty decent concerted effort of people saying, you know, take your studs, take all your big guys, and then on the back end, you know, maybe go with a little bit more, higher ceiling guys like the Glasnows, the Giolitos, and I buy into that, especially in those formats, because if you do get lucky, now you may strike out and you may take Lucas Giolito, and all of a sudden he's like the sixth one out of all these guys that comes up, and that sucks. But the potential is just so rich that I wouldn't pass up. I would have, if I'm in a 15-man, I will have one of those six on my team. I'll make sure that I do that.
Yeah, and this is not a pitcher example. And, of course, everybody's aware of this because I think everyone that had this situation won their league. But last year in our podcast league, we did AL only. And I picked him up after the draft. But after the draft, I picked up Carlos Correa for $1 off of Fab. Sat on him for like 3 weeks, and then I won the league because anybody that picked up Carlos that picked him up in an AL only league won the league. So you might have to wait. You can sit and leave him on your bench, but yeah, the deeper league, that if they do come up, they're so much better than the average replacement player that the reward is too great to not take a risk like that.
You know, and one thing I would add to that, because I love your point. Remember, I was talking about my strategy where I'm going to go take two guys in the top 20. Then I'm going to, you know, probably most likely for me, I would take, you know, hitter, pitcher, maybe hitter. And then I'm going to go probably at least one pitcher and another. So when I'm coming in and getting my fifth and sixth starter, I'm more likely to go take, like I said, a Kennedy and then a Ross. And then just knowing all of this and knowing I have such a deep and powerful staff that I can award myself one of these guys to make sure for later on. So I'm not necessarily like catering my draft to these players, but the way I draft is the perfect scenario for adding one or even possibly two of these guys, depending like how deep of a bench that you roster.
Yeah, because even if you don't have an NA slot necessarily, like in our I believe in our dynasty we have a 7-man bench. But if you have something like a 7-8, you know, or really, you know, if you only have a 3-man bench, like in our 10-team league that we play in, I have it set up as a 3-man bench. Well, then you just can't afford it. You know, if you need those spots for players that are playing. But the deeper your bench or more bench spots you have too, treat one of them like an NA slot and just hold on to one of these guys. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, we just did a draft. I flew out to San Francisco with we were talking about Howard, you know, Howard and like Ray Flowers and Laura Michaels. It was a fun. We called it the Barf League, and we all did that draft, and it was deep. It is a deep bench. I have a guy like Orlando Arcia. You know, we have no NA spot, and I'm rostering him. But if you go back, you can find the results of the draft and how everyone went. You will see a really heavy litany of young guys getting drafted in the last like 3-4 rounds. I mean, the entire, you know, top 20 prospect list is being rostered by 12 people and just a little bit of a deeper bench. So it's definitely a strategy people should consider.
The only thing I like better than going deep is a good 69.
So.
Hey, all right. Well, Joe, who rounds out your top three then?
I had Berrios as my number one guy that I'd want. Giolito too, because I think those two have the best chance to come up and pitch. I do think one of those Dodgers guys will get a chance to pitch, but yeah, like I'm just not sure which one yet. I just don't think Tyler Glasnow is going to come up, so I went with Blake Snell as my third one. I have no idea if he's going to come up either, but if he does, I like everything about the situation. And I just can't see Glasnow getting a chance this year.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, maybe, but not. If anything, I feel like it'd be after the All-Star break. I just don't, you know, they don't have the need for him right now in Pittsburgh, do they?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, I wrote a couple things on here. I actually feel how you feel about Glasnow. I feel that way with Blake Snell, as awesome and as amazing as he is. I just visually don't see where he goes in that rotation unless they want to pick it apart. But the other guy in Pittsburgh, Jameson Taillon, I think that's a guy that could be – I put him kind of as, you know, be on the lookout and watch. He's on that 37 article as a player that even maybe before Glasnow, maybe both of those guys are pitching, but he suffered some Tommy John, missed some time. He was up. It was like a 1-2 punch, Garrett Cole and Jameson Taillon, and everyone forgets about him now. So
that's
a
terrific name that's everybody's just completely forgot about him. Yeah, and so, yeah, and I agree with your point, too, the Welsh. I mean, you look at the Rays rotation, Archer, Odorizzi, Smiley, Erasmo, Matt Moore. That's pretty good. I mean, there's a little risk in there with injuries and whatnot. And
there's some injury risk, yeah, but he would need that. He's not getting in without injuries. Yeah. So.
Well, one guy that I want to mention that we haven't touched on yet that has an outside shot at it, making the majors this year, and that's Sean Manaea out in Oakland.
Wow. God, I didn't mean to jump in. Like, literally, I had him on my tongue, and I'm actually looking at him right now. And when you said that, I was just like, Nathan, you're just great.
Well, then, as long as you got your tongue out, care for a 69?
Hey-o.
If you look at that rotation out in Oakland, I mean, that's awful, right? You've got Drew Pomerantz at the back end of that. I mean,
they traded him. What the hell are you talking about?
Chris Bassett is in the rotation right now.
People are actually talking about him having some upside. But really, I mean, anything beyond Sonny Gray, I think, is a pretty huge question mark. And he's 20, Manaea, that is. He's 24 now. And I think it's time for the A's to make use of him, assuming he doesn't get injured again. That's the only thing. Over 10 strikeouts per nine last year. Control is his really only issue. He only threw 74 and a third innings last year, but struck out 90 with a 2.66 ERA. Just a huge dude, 6'5", 245. So he could be a horse if he can just stay healthy. Kendall Graveman is the guy at the end of that rotation. And I mean, you look at Rich Hill, Jesse Hahn. Really? You think those guys are going to last all season? There's no way. So I think there's a pretty good chance you see Sean Manaea this year.
That actually is a really good call. Yeah, I do think that because of the question marks in their rotation, he could get a chance. But the real question is, will he be as good as Mookie Betts this season?
Shut up, Joe. God damn it. You would have to bring that up.
Is there a dynasty trade there?
Yeah. A couple years ago when Mookie Betts was first gaining, it was all full steam ahead on the Mookie train. He was still in double A at this point. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to cash in. This guy's not going to be that good. You know, the hype is huge on this guy. I'm going to get pitching here for this Dynasty Points League, and I traded him straight up for Sean Manaea. That has not suited me too well.
You 69'd yourself there. That's brutal. Yikes. One other name I would throw out just as one last one since we're talking pitching is Robert Stevenson in Cincinnati. High strikeout guy. He may, of all the pitchers, have one of the best chances at breaking camp in the rotation, if not pretty soon. So, you know, I don't know. If you're in a really big league, look at him too.
Agreed. All righty. So, I'm going to take a little break here.
And now, a cup of coffee. With our guest.
All right. So, we are prepared to have a cup of coffee with the Welsh. Man who has forsaken St. Patrick's Day in lieu of doing a fantasy baseball podcast. Total respect. So, first question that I have for you, Mr. Welsh, other than losing to me in the Friends of Dear Mr. Fantasy League, what is your biggest fear?
Well, I apparently up until a couple hours ago, it was not paying Chris McBrien an entry fee to a league. That became my biggest fear on the planet.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Chris McBrien is a headhunter. If you guys ever do a league with Chris, make sure you pay with plenty of time. I was literally on the phone with PayPal making sure he got his money because I was legitimately scared for my life.
Yeah, that dude, he posted on our Facebook page that with giant red arrows, those who have not paid and publicly shame them.
it's a great way to do it. My biggest fear, do you want a real answer, like what my actual big – because I have – plenty of fears. Bogman, my co-host, is just one of those people that's like two or three things, and I'm just like try to be like a perfectionist.
Yeah, give me something really weird then so I can make fun of you for it.
Okay, well, I'll give you the one. We have this program that we do, just listeners kind of supporting us and kind of, you know, like hanging out with us. We call it the ITL Army, and we create these goals that we can reach. And one of the goals, we've already teased this, is it's going to be a fear factor. Bogman and I are going to video our two biggest fears. And it's going to be a little bit down the ways here for that goal. But the fear is going to be, I'm going to let a tarantula walk on me, and Scott will let a Palo Verde beetle walk on him. And I'm not joking to you. I am a little baby child when it comes to spiders. I'm so terrified.
I hate spiders, dude. So I'm totally there with you. What is a Halliburton beetle? Is that what you said? What?
It's a Palo Verde beetle. It's I don't know if they're any other place, but in Arizona. But I mean, imagine like a styrofoam cup, and then paint it black with legs, and it flies.
That does sound terrifying.
It's horrible. It's horrible, and they're around in the summer. And when Scott and I were kids, you know, we'd play out like in tennis courts and stuff. And then all of a sudden just dive bomb these giant Palo Verde beetles. And he's just terrified of them. Like, and Scott's not a scared guy. Like I have weird shit. I'm like, clowns are kind of freak me out. And like, you know, it just, I have weird stuff. But he's like, it's that one. So it's actually probably going to be worse for him because it's so specific. But apparently we have insect issues.
I've heard of that. You know, it's almost too bad that Jesse isn't here. Jesse, our producer, who hasn't been on the show actually for like a month and a half. People who have only been listening to us for the last couple of weeks don't even know he exists on this show. But
yeah,
are you okay, Jesse?
he moved. Yeah. That was one of the big reasons. He moved into a brand new house, into his deluxe apartment in the sky, as I've been saying. So he was busy there for a couple weeks. And on these preseason shows, like, we literally just talk baseball, except for maybe 5 minutes with our guests at the end. And Jesse just usually would sit there and like text, and he would be totally bored. So I think he was not too, because normally on our normal shows during the regular season, we do like a half hour of just totally non-baseball at the end. And then he jumps in a lot on that. So, but yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Do you guys notice like when people like comment on your show and stuff? Because we get this all the time because we're pretty similar. We like to dick around a whole lot. Do you get the people that are like, Jesus, what's with the dicking around? Get to the
baseball. Oh, yeah. One of our only non-good review is somebody who, they finished their review, they gave us 2 stars out of 5, and said, stop doing funny stuff.
That's great. Thank you. Thank you for America there.
Yeah.
Stop being funny.
I think that he even hated like one of the things that everybody loved. He hated the kitchen appliance madness, where we talked about which kitchen appliance would win in a fight to the death. And like everybody else that like reviewed or emailed or said anything about it, thought it was awesome. And this guy's like, I don't want to hear about kitchen appliances. So he was, yeah. So, and if people say stuff like that, I'm just like, you know what? Just go ahead and stop listening then.
Yeah, that's my biggest fear, being around those people. Like, oh, let's not be funny and let's be serious. Let's be serious.
Yeah, the hell with that.
It's America. Let's make America great again.
Oh, here we go. We've got...
That's my other fear, talking politics. So
that is terrifying, yes, especially with Donald Trump being involved.
Next question. My whatever Terrell Owens' agent was. Next question.
Joe, did you have anything you wanted to interject?
Well, I mean, I can throw out an old classic Jesse question.
We actually never got to the point that I was bringing Jesse in. Around. He was afraid of, like, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, wasn't he? Willy Wonka? Wasn't he afraid of Willy Wonka raping him or something?
Yeah, I think he did say Willy Wonka
yes,
was one of
seriously.
Like, at least have a tangible, like, thing that could happen. Johnny Depp is not going out, or Gene Wilder is not going. Would he freak out if he saw Gene Wilder in public or Johnny Depp?
Is Gene Wilder still alive? He's got to be really old by now.
God, I think he is. I hope so. Yeah. Love Gene Wilder.
I hope he is too. Yeah, I don't know, but one of the other things that Jesse is afraid of that he listed on, I think we did like a top five of our fears, and he said one of his fears is chewing gum. He hates chewing gum.
This is true. He is afraid of chewing gum. He will.
Is it because it like stays in your body for like 10 years?
It makes
years
him
or
throw
something?
Up if he puts it in his mouth.
I bet it does.
Hey-o.
Hey-o. 69, I bet it does, Jesse. Stop talking, man.
Best joke of the show. Okay, sorry to railroad you there, Joe.
No, that's okay. But it just kind of reminded me of this thing when you kind of referenced a little bit of Trump there. But we did ask a couple people in the past that if you were allowed to, you know, this is kind of like a purge situation. You're allowed to, for the good of the world, kill anyone you want. Then would you do it, A? And then if you would, who would you pick?
Wow. That's that is philosophically very deep. You know, I probably, that's tough to say. I mean, I probably wouldn't, just like off the top of my head. If like the answer, this is, I guess this isn't really a super funny answer, but it's like, if it were being like, would you take out Trump? Would you take out, you know, Bing Yang, Kim, whatever, you know, I probably not. I mean, obviously you could think of like real life things that happen, but I don't think so. I'm a little too sensitive, guys, for murder. Couldn't hold that on my shoulders. I couldn't hold a spider or death on my shoulders.
I do think when we asked that last one, I think it was either – I can't remember Nate or me that answered that. And one of us did say we'd kill Tyler Perry.
Yeah, well, I believe I said that and you agreed with it. But okay, so hypothetically, if you're not literally murdering anyone, but figuratively, someone who you would be glad to never see again.
Perhaps we can just banish them to somewhere where they'll never be seen again. Yes, use your wizardry.
Like a Escape from New York type of island. They're all in their own place. We can move them all to Australia. There's not much need for that. We can put all the prisoners there.
We don't have any Australian listeners, that's great.
Yeah. There's probably a pretty heavy list of people I would not want to see again. I feel like A-Rod and his smug bullshit, I wouldn't want to see his anymore. Barry Bonds pisses me off that we're talking about him again. Yep. Maybe Ray Lewis. They could all go together. That'd be a great.
Right on. Did you say anything else, Joe, on that one? Or did you just agree with Tyler Perry? I can't remember what you said.
I don't even know if I had anything to do, but I think given the option now, I think I might get rid of all the Kardashians.
That's a good one.
That, you know what? And David Schwimmer now, too. He's got to go because he's synonymous with them.
What
now.
Did he do?
Yeah,
I missed
that. Is,
yeah, he's just... in the new OJ versus People versus OJ. Okay. He's playing. And they're just. They're just trying to just shove the Kardashians down our throat, you know, phrasing there. But David Schwimmer is just awful. His face has just got to go.
Oh, I do love that show, though, man. I really was getting into it. It's been one of my favorite shows. But I actually, like, when they did that, a couple of those scenes where they were trying to, show the Kardashians when they were little and everybody just, like, thought it was so hilarious that they weren't famous now and we all know what they become. And I just, those were the scenes that I like the least on The People versus O.J. Simpson.
Yeah, out of their way. They're like, hey, Chloe, come here. And you're like, just give me a break.
Yeah, just bringing those people in that have absolutely nothing to do with anything just because they're famous now, and somebody and some people that like watch that stupid show would be like, oh my God, it's Chloe.
Gross.
I'm really mad at David Schwimmer now for supporting this. So I'm going to leave that. I'm going to leave here with this, guys, that I really don't like David Schwimmer now.
Perfect.
That poor guy, you know, and I used to love Ross.
He was always the guy that I couldn't stand on Friends.
Me too. Ross was kind of intolerable. Like, Ian. Nah, no, Ross, gotta go. Everything he does. What? Name the good thing that he did.
Boy, yeah, I mean, Ross was definitely the worst of the friends. I mean, I would probably take – I'd rank it Chandler, Joey, Ross for sure of the three guys. I mean, I love Chandler, though.
You'd take Phoebe over Ross.
Oh, if we throw the girls in there too, I think, then I'd go Rachel, Monica, Phoebe, I think. So Ross definitely is sixth of the friends. I might even rank him behind Chandler.
Let's start a move. Let's start a movement. Let's actually do an actual purge. David Schwimmer's
going. Right, yeah, we're gonna start get a petition going on for that. All right. Well, before you leave, Welsh, one quick question. You live in Arizona, obviously. You get to go to a lot of spring training games, but there is a downside to living in Arizona. But I wanted to know which one is worse: scorpions or old people wearing socks with sandals?
Well, they're probably wearing the socks and sandals because of scorpions.
Safety first. That's my middle name.
Yeah, it is safety first. I mean, you could have just said like old people and stopped with the sandal thing, and that would have been my answer. Scorpions are not that big of a deal. They're definitely. I mean, I can tell you in the 20 years I've lived here, I've probably encountered 50. So that does seem like a lot, but it's, you know, like two a year or something like that. I've stepped on one, so. It's a little bit scary when you got a kid, but definitely the old people, the gray hairs around here, they're driving. If they're driving with their sandals and their socks, it's just horrible. It's usually the dads that have the sandals and socks.
Yeah, they're the worst at that. I'm laughing now because that reminded me of a South Park episode where old people kept driving and they kept murdering people. Yeah.
That's Phoenix.
They were on their way to Country Kitchen Buffet.
Right.
Hey, Shunny. Yep, that's pretty much it.
All right. Well, we thank you very much for being a part of the Nasty Cast today, the Welsh. Why don't you find, before you go, why don't you tell the people where they can find you on the internet?
Yeah, I really appreciate you guys having me on. You can find me on Twitter at Is It The Welsh. You can find what we do over at InThisLeague.com. It's the ITL Fantasy Insert Sport podcast, because we do a whole majority of them. You can find all the podcasts. We've got articles just like you guys do. I mean, we got a whole litany of the stuff. We like to have fun. We like to joke around. If you happen to have the Fantasy Sports Network and you maybe subscribe online, or if you live on the East Coast and have that, I just did a video series of the San Francisco draft, the Barf League, and it's airing like every day for the rest of the way through. So you could see my awful, disgusting face, and you can laugh and point if you'd like. But yeah, InThisLeague.com and on Twitter is
that
it
sounds
well.
Great, man. You got your fingers in all sort of figurative pies holes? And yep. Holes. Yes, over there.
Yes. Fingers are in all the holes when we're 69. <Ew. my>
What better way to end the show than like that? All right. Yeah, you guys do great work over there. It's a terrific podcast. I'm glad you guys are finding a lot of success. So thanks for being a part of the show, man.
Hey, really appreciate it. Love it, guys. Thanks so much.
Thanks again to the Welsh from the In This League podcast and InThisLeague.com for joining us today. Thank you for that dancing monkey, Joe, and also the emoji with the mustache and the monocle.
That I think mustache monocle might be my favorite one, yeah.
He keeps raising his eyebrow at me and wiggling his mustache.
Yes, he does that. I love that. But yeah, thanks to the Welsh. He was a super nice guy. First time we've had the chance to talk to him and meet him. He was awesome. Really easy to talk to.
Did not disappoint.
No, he did not disappoint. He's going to be our final guest of the preseason.
Oh, that's true. I forgot about we didn't even mention that to him, but yeah, he is our finale.
Yep, he was the finale, batting leadoff or ninth, I don't know. I guess you don't want to say batting ninth.
That sounds bad when you put it that way, but when you put it as the finale, then it's a
finale,
good
yes.
thing.
He was the finale, the grand finale. And yeah, it was just a good episode. He brought some good information, and we really liked talking to him. And yeah, he did say it after. I think that was on the air when he said he was kind of tough act to follow because he had to come on after Spore. But
yeah, Spore, yeah.
I think he did well, though.
He did very well. We were very gracious. We were very glad that he was gracious enough to join us. So don't forget, if you have any feedback for us, to let us know. If you want to chit-chat with us, at Fantasy Amateurs on Twitter, or if you want to email us, it's thefantasyamateurs@gmail.com. And you know what? If you're bored, leave us a review on iTunes.
Sure. And actually, the most special of special guests might be finally rejoining us next week.
Oh, wait a minute. Are you talking about the third wheel of Nasty?
The third wheel, yes. He's been gone for so long.
Some people out there in podcast land don't even know who we're talking about.
That is, we did talk about him a little bit with the Welsh, so I mean, it's not like he'd be a total secret, but really, I bet there is a certain percentage of our listeners right now that don't know who Jesse is.
That's true. That would be Jesse Jordan, our intrepid producer.
So anyway, next week, return of the Mac. I do believe Jesse's going to be back. There are some people out there on Twitter and in the world that have said that they miss their Jesse. So he's coming back next week. So
yeah.
Get excited.
I am super stoked for next week's show. It's going to be our Dudes and Don'ts show, which is our sleepers and busts for the season. And we're also, of course, it's March Madness time. So we're going to bust out our brackets for the first time this year. And we've debated hotly which one it's going to be, and we still don't know what bracket is going to be, but it will be something, and it will be entertaining. I guarantee goddamn it.
We gotta think of something. And we'll talk about it off the air, but we got to decide what to kick it off with, make it something fun. But it'll be nice to get back into the usual format of the show, although the preseason shows are always, it's kind of the wrapping up of the preseason where all our position previews and all that stuff is done.
Well,
you know,
technically, we still have a closer show to talk about.
Yeah, but we're not going to do a whole show on it. Yeah, we'll do a little bit of closer talk at some point on one of the other shows. But and we'll have a couple other preseason shows, too. It's not like we're into the regular season, but, these big, long, two where me and Nate sit, or Nate and I, perhaps you could say, sit down and talk for 2.5 hours about starting pitching like we did the other day. That won't be happening anymore. So
no.
A bittersweet end to the preseason, but it was fun, and hopefully everybody got to, maybe one good call that we made out of the preseason.
Are you playing jacks on your desk there? Or
that was my pens.
Oh, okay. Like, it's an unfortunate game to choose while you're doing a podcast. It'd be jacks.
But it's my favorite game.
Okay, well, I won't get in the way of your love for jacks.
Isn't that one of the guys' names on Sons of Anarchy?
That is the guy's name on Sons of Anarchy. That's the man.
So there you go. You could have been saying that I love that guy.
He doesn't make such clinky sounds, though.
Oh, yeah. I didn't actually get into that show. I know Anna watched it. I just never was into it.
Yeah, I watched it. It wasn't the best series ever, but I enjoyed it.
It was like, I think, wasn't it ending around the same time as Breaking Bad, though?
It could have been. I never. I only watched the last half of the last season when it was live, and I don't remember exactly when that was. By the way, one show that's coming back. Have you ever watched Daredevil on Netflix?
No.
Oh man, great show! And season two is right around the corner. Yeah, it's I've never cared at all for any superhero shows or movies or anything, but it's a series on Netflix. Really good.
Is it? I hope it's Ben Affleck then, because he was in.
It's
the movie.
Not Ben Affleck.
Oh
no, sorry. There's not any, like, Rosario Dawson is the only big name actor that has been in it so far.
All right. Well, my favorite show on television probably just came back last night. I gotta watch it tonight. I didn't watch it.
What's that?
The Americans.
Oh yeah, you wouldn't even borrow me the first season DVD of that because you're a jerk.
Did you ask?
Yes.
Oh fine. I'll bring it tomorrow to work then.
Jerk.
Oh, you're not going to work.
No, I'm not. I'm going to continue getting drunk tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to go in for a couple hours, but I will bring the DVDs to you tomorrow so you can get started. Although there is a season two now that you would have to go out and get.
Jolly good. All right. Well, hey, there's some recommendations for you people who don't know what to watch until baseball starts. So
there you go.
You're friggin' welcome. All right. Well, until next week, ladies and gentlemen, fantasy gods, shine upon you.